Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio, a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota National Guard, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System, and Beyond the Yellow Ribbon. Get updates and show information at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Your host is former Command Senior Enlisted Leader for the Minnesota National Guard,
retired
Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham.
All right. Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. Whether you're listening on a local Minnesota station across the country on our national broadcast or on your favorite podcast platform, we're glad that you're with us today. And today, we're out here at Dan Patch Park for Military Appreciation Day at the Minnesota State Fair. This is the second of two special shows from the fair. And today we're going to hear from the Minnesota National Guard and the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. But kicking us off today is a very special guest. It's the 41st Governor of Minnesota, Governor Tim Walz. Governor, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Good to be with you, Sergeant Major. Thanks
great
for all
to
your
have
work.
You sneak in the back there. You know, it was kind of like a covert operation.
Right by the spam. By the spam booth.
Right by the spam booth. And Governor, I only get you for, maybe 10 minutes, if that. And, just want to talk about a couple of things. And, you know, you've been a great supporter for Minnesota Military Radio coming on at least annually. You call in on our Memorial Day live show, which is always great. And, you know, let's just kind of go down some memory lane stuff, Governor. You're, looking back, obviously in the fall, you're going to be leaving office, handing the keys over to somebody else.
Yep.
And I'm just wondering, as we look at the veteran community, the things that you've been able to accomplish through the support of the legislature, of course, what are the things that you're most proud of as it relates to our Minnesota veterans that you've done over the last 8 years?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is this is one issue that unifies Minnesotans, and I know it's probably an understatement to say there's things that it's easy to divide us, but on this one of building that coalition around care for veterans, making sure that one of the things I'm most proud of is before we do any budget in Minnesota, we take care of the veterans' issues first. And every single year, we have passed up budget before we talked about anything else. We did not pit, seniors against veterans. We did not pit education against veterans. We passed that ahead. That's something unique to Minnesota, and that thing gets unanimous votes. I think we have been unanimous in those votes. And because of that, we're a state that has some of the lowest homelessness rates amongst veterans, almost virtually eliminated. And we've opened more veterans' homes than any other state in the nation, and they continuously rank as the best in that. And add into our world-class veteran cemeteries, that care for veterans in Minnesota is nonpartisan, it's non-political, and it has been highly effective. And I think that's something, I've been at this since 2 days after I was 17, got to serve as the ranking member in Congress with Jeff Miller, my friend from Florida, and proud of those things we move forward. This is not about veterans winning the lottery or something. This is about keeping faith with those who are willing to do the hardest things.
Well, I mean, that's obviously the omnibus bill is a huge thing.
Huge.
We absolutely needed that. We had to get out of that conversation of agriculture and everything else and solve veterans' issues first, which
yes.
I'm glad that it was able to get done, started in your tenure and continue. And hopefully that's one of those baton things you pass off that says we're going to keep doing this moving forward regardless who gets in office.
I don't think there's any going back on that. It's the expectations people have. And to be candid with you, I think in a broken political system, this is the model to get out of this. That we do this, we take that single subject, we pass it. And I think, for all the criticism, you'll hear very little, if any, criticisms around care for veterans in Minnesota, because I think it's pretty well established. It's universal. We're in it together. Our veteran service organizations, the CVSO, Brad Lindsay and his team over at MDVA, no one takes credit for the things that get done, and we all do it together. And that omnibus to just say, it never gets done till the end of May, of these budgets, and everything gets thrown together. It's the sausage making of laws. But we said, let's end that when it comes to veterans. And I think that has been the reason that we've been so successful.
I think that the omnibus is going to have a lasting effect. And, you might answer this question saying, hey, that's the thing that's going to have the lasting contribution. But I'm just wondering if, thinking about your tenure and then looking forward and the legacy that you leave behind for the next generation, is there something else, or is it really just the omnibus where you can say that's the one thing, that's the thing that happened that really is setting the stage the best that you're most proud of?
Well, I think the omnibus is the vehicle, and then it led to things like reduction in veteran suicide, a focus, reduction and making Minnesota the fifth state to functionally eliminate veterans' homelessness, updating the veterans' homes and the cemeteries. I think the omnibus was the the key to getting there. But I think those legacy pieces are critically important. And this is one of those, again, nobody takes credit for this because we're all in it together. And I think you don't hear this story enough is these veterans issues we're talking about, this is expensive. It costs money. But that's one of the things that we've said. If we're going to send you, that's not going to be the consideration of why we don't care for our veterans. And I think it's pretty clear that if you're a veteran in Minnesota, the public certainly wants us to do that. They will tell us, you guys can fight about everything else, but you better take care of the veterans. You better take care of the National Guard. And I think that's happened. So for me, is I think it's changing the tone on that, showing that it's there. I don't think a lot of Minnesotans would know is we're voting on, you know, tens of millions of dollars in these budgets, and they're being voted on unanimously, and then they're being executed by MDVA in a way that is cost-effective and improves veterans' lives.
Now, you've been in the political world for quite a long time. You said 2 days after you were 17. I didn't realize you started that early, but I think I first met you when you were in
Congress.
Well,
I wasn't political then. I was just in the Guard.
I got you.
Political
until
I was 40.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. All right. So you were a late bloomer politically then.
Late. I got to get another career now.
There you go. But so you spent time in Congress, obviously. You came back as the governor. All this time that you spent working on veteran issues, I mean, that I think that's been on your platform since day one.
It has.
I'm just wondering if there's something that you've really learned, something new that has come out of all of that experience that now, you know, you're like, this is something we have to apply to, or you have applied now to our Minnesota veteran community, because you didn't obviously have all the information on day one. So what are the things that you really have learned?
Well, I think the biggest thing is don't assume you know about someone, and it's a lesson you should take to all life. And I tell this story because I met a young man named Clay Hunt. He was a sniper, spent time in Iraq where he was shot, healed up, went back, went to Afghanistan, again, performed Silver Star, performed admirably. He came back home and was working to reduce veteran suicides and make sure the care was getting there. This kid was from Texas, 6'4". He was central casting that you would see. We became friends working on these issues, staunchly Republican, but didn't matter in this space. And then I got the call from his mother one day. He took his own life. And I think the thing that showed me is that there's a facade that you can tell, and the strongest and the most, you know, the people that you would lean to think they were there, they may be internally struggling. So it really had me focus on this. And again, reducing those numbers in veterans care, this is a zero-sum proposition. If one person is still not getting the care or not getting that, as we know this, most of our veteran suicides are folks that never enter into the VA system. And I think what I learned from Clay Hunt, and we passed that legislation, that working with the community, getting past the things that you assumed, and I just assumed, oh, this guy's so strong, he's out there working on this, he won't need the help. I think it's the family, the friends, the fellow warriors alongside them need to pay close attention to that. And I think that's the thing that I keep very cognizant on. And I think it's really important to not assume something about somebody, especially in this space.
I think that's one of the big lessons learned is that, you know, there are little indicators often seen by different people. And if you were able to magically piece all those things together, you'd realize there's a problem.
Yes.
But having open and honest conversations with people obviously can help reduce our suicide rate amongst our veterans, which is important. Governor, just a couple of minutes left here. And, you know, let's talk about, you know, really what's next, right? So as I mentioned, you know, you're on your last couple of months here in office, and you're going to move on. And, you know, this question is twofold. One, what's your message to the next organization or the next administration that comes in and assumes the office of governor? And then what are you going to do when you leave?
Well, I wouldn't presume to tell someone this, but I would say, especially in this space, and they will all have their own ideas and build it, and you play the cards you're dealt. I mean, I didn't expect to deal with a global pandemic or civil unrest or some of those.
Yeah.
The one thing I would say is trust the people who know best about this in veteran space. Trust them. You don't need to come out and reinvent the wheel on this. You don't need to come up with a big 10-point plan that you have on this. That has been written, practiced, done, and ready to go. I think stay in that space. And as far as I'm concerned, it's been the privilege of my lifetime to serve. And I kind of feel like the knowledge I got, I want to pass that on. I'm not a big believer that you go out and you turn it into a lobbying or something like that. I'm not going to do that. I think I'm going to go teach some school again.
Okay.
And I think share the examples of what you have. And because I'm always challenging that. I was up at Minnesota Duluth yesterday in a classroom up there. And it's really good to see how people are seeing this differently. And I have this amount of experience. And you can say, well, thank God we're not getting more of that or whatever. That's the way the system works. Yeah. So, but I hope to stay in this space because I think the one thing is there is no partisanship on this. We've proven that. Folks who voted against me 99% of the time up at the Capitol were staunchly aligned on this because we were in it together because they knew this wasn't me talking about it. This was veterans groups talking about it.
All right, Governor, less than a minute here. We've got a live audience in front of us. We've got people listening on 72 stations across Minnesota, national broadcast. Any final thoughts or message you'd like to leave for our Minnesota residents, veterans and service members out there?
Well, family? The folks are at the fair. It's Military Appreciation Day. Thank you for making this day your day to be here. I think we understand that if you're having fun with your family, you're going to picnics, you're going to shows, that is given to us at a cost of heavy sacrifice. And I think at a time when we're at war, the lesson the Vietnam veterans taught us is you can critique the conflict if you so choose to do that, and that's healthy in a democracy. Don't critique the warriors and don't drag them into the political debate. Make sure no matter what your feelings on the current conflict are, there's going to be folks that are going to come back and need care. Deliver it.
Awesome. Governor Tim Walz, thanks for joining us on Minnesota Military Radio. Great to see you.
Thank you, Sergeant Major.
And look forward to seeing what comes next for you. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a quick break. This is Minnesota Military Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. Here we are out at the Minnesota State Fair, the Great Minnesota Get Together Military Appreciation Day. We are in Dan Patch Park, and we're recording our second of two shows out here today on Military Appreciation Day. And just got done with a conversation with the governor of Minnesota, and now I get to bring in another senior leader in the state of Minnesota, and that's the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Sean Mankey. Sir, General, it's wonderful to have you back on the program.
It's great to be here, Sergeant Major. What a great day. Great Minnesota get together. Happy to be here. Proud to be here.
Yeah, well, wonderful to have you here. And, just want to, shout out to you. And once again, just say thanks for your continued support. And, you make it a point to come out here on Minnesota, or on Military Appreciation Day out at the fair and just spend a little bit of time with us. I know you've got another program you got to get to. So we're just going to get right after it. But I just want to make sure you know that we really appreciate you. Let's talk about Military Appreciation Day. People are here. We're going to have thousands of people. Looks like we got 1,000 people in the crowd right now, which is awesome. And you know what? We've got people in uniform, military uniform all over the place. And, people are going to run into soldiers, into airmen, maybe some Marines out there. I don't know, and some sailors. But I'm wondering if you might want to talk a little bit about, as people come out and they see and interact with our service members, what do you want them to know?
Hey, first and foremost, our service members are, as our motto says, we're always ready, we're always there. And the great thing about the Great Minnesota Get-Together, it is kind of a cliche, but this is a great day to come to the fair because no matter what, every year that I've been here on this day, I'll be walking down some street, going somewhere, looking where I'm going, and I'll see someone that I know. And you do. It's a small world, right? But you run into people. And you connect with them, you ask them how they're doing, you see what's new in their life, if they got a new kid or how their kids are doing in college or life or whatever, and you take the 5-10 minutes and talk to them and you get grounded and it kind of makes you feel good inside. And we got some great people in our organization, and every time I get to spend a little bit of time with them, it just makes me feel good. It's some of that good thing, and this is one of my favorite days of the year coming out here to do this.
You're right. It's a small world. I love coming out here, too, running into so many people that I've served with. What I don't like, sir, is when you run into somebody that you know but you don't remember their name. And so my wife and I have a little trick. Maybe you do this with Mary, too, or maybe she will introduce herself and hopefully get that person to say their name just so it clicks. I'm good with faces but bad with names generally.
Yeah, but Sergeant Major, you probably have an opportunity because you were the command senior enlisted of the Minnesota National Guard, so a lot more people probably knew you in your role than you knew them just as the nature of the beast. But, regardless, it's always good to see people. And
It certainly is. Let's talk about the theme this year, sir. Every year there's a new theme out at the State Fair. This year it's Your Neighbors, Our Community. And I think this really hits home the other motto. I think it's the 34th Infantry Division has, or the Red Bulls they have, about, we live here, we work here, we serve here. And I think that's really what this motto, Your Neighbors, Our Community, really means.
Yeah. So our service members, they're teachers, they coach in the community. We have retired people. I mean, I talked to a gentleman right before I came up on stage. He's retired out of the active Army. He's active in AUSA now, but he was talking about how he's settled in the Orono community, got three kids, he's coaching lacrosse, you know, contributing to the community. And I think that's what our service members do. You know, not only do they wear this uniform and serve our state and serve our nation, but, you know, they contribute to their community, they contribute to their employer. You know, whether they're a lawyer, a garbage truck driver, mechanic, whatever the case may be, we're part of your community, and we just get the opportunity to wear this uniform and do some pretty good stuff.
Yeah, we certainly do. You know, even over my career, the amount of things that I've been able to experience, and I think that really just brings another element of our service members, or to the community from our service members. You know, talk about, you know, the discipline, the leadership skills. I mean, you're talking about someone that's coaching now, and those are important things that our communities need, are people to step up and take on some of these roles that often many don't want to.
Right. Yeah, you know, but I think, you know, some of the skills that we learn in the military help us with that. You know, interacting with people, all kinds of different people, multinational, all parts of the country, you know, and they learn those skills and they're able to help other people out through a coaching or just being, you know, a member of a volunteer organization, making things better, contributing, giving back to the community.
General, we know that as a member of the National Guard, there's the dual mission, a federal mission, a state mission. You know, we have soldiers, airmen that have deployed for local emergencies, whether it's a disaster or otherwise. We have people that are deployed right now overseas. And, you know, this happens. It's not a it's not infrequent, I should say.
Right.
And I'm just wondering, you know, how do you coach that to the team, to the organization, to still maintain this balance of, you know, the responsibility to be ready, always there, but still have this civilian life that they need to balance as well?
Well, I think we're fortunate here in Minnesota where we have a highly trained force, all-volunteer force, you know, and our strength represents that. We're about 107% filled on the Army side and about 104% filled on the Air side. So we have people that want to be in this organization, and we train them, we get them ready, and, you know, and we have programs that we educate employers and thank them for the support that they give their service members. And there is that balance. But, you know, most of our soldiers want to be part of something bigger and contribute. And the deployments really haven't slowed down any. As you said, we have soldiers deployed all around the world right now. We have airmen deployed all around the world right now. And then just recently we had, you know, soldiers and airmen up in northeastern Minnesota on the wildfires in the Boundary Waters Canoe area. So, you know, we truly are unique, and we have a state mission, we have a federal mission, and then we do a lot of stuff in the local community through partnerships as well.
One of your points of emphasis is modernization. You talk about modernization all the time, and, you know, that includes things like, of course, aircraft, vehicles, facilities, even weapons. And I'm just wondering if there's something that will matter most as it relates to readiness when we look forward, and then maybe there's a little tease you give to our audience about what they might see as changes, you know, happen over the next couple of years.
Yeah, I think the biggest reason we want to modernize and make sure that our soldiers and airmen have the best and newest equipment is so that when we work side by side with our active duty component partners, we have the same equipment, we're interoperable. You know, we're fielding C-130J models to replace the H models I have down here at Minneapolis-St. Paul. And, you know, that will get the first tails next summer sometime, and they'll be set up for another 30 years. Up in Duluth, we are actively working through a lot of partnerships with our congressional delegation, the governor's office, and everything else, the community, to try and get them F-35 fighters. There's two squadrons of fighters being fielded to the National Guard. We want to make sure that the 148th is near the top of that list so that they are chosen, which will, again, cement their future into the well into the next decade.
Well, I think that's why the readiness and the manning or the staffing of your organization is so important, right? I mean, if you have the people, then the equipment will follow, but you still have to have the right people in your corner advocating for you as well.
Absolutely. You know, I use the analogy, if you got a lot of work to do, a big job, it's a lot easier when you have the people you need to do the job. If you're short people, everybody else is working a little bit harder, and then you can't get it done. So we pride ourselves on making sure we got the right people in the right job.
All right, General, we've got a minute left here, but we've got a good listening audience out here. We've got 72 radio stations that are going to be playing this show later on, and then, of course, we've got the national broadcast. General, there's going to be somebody who's listening to this program that is not serving yet, and maybe they're thinking about it, or they will in the future. And I'm wondering if you've got any type of a message you'd want to deliver to what we would call our next generation of Minnesota service members.
Yeah, I would say, hey, come on in, right? If you want to join a winning team, if you enjoy being on a team, whether it's a football team, baseball team, band, choir, book club, whatever, come on in, join the team. You'll have camaraderie. We get to do a lot of neat stuff. You know, we deploy all around the world. We do missions here in the state of Minnesota, all across the nation. We got some great educational benefits. We can help you pay for a Votech school, a college, whatever the case may be. And then if you do it for 20 years, you get some pretty good long-term benefits.
Yes, you do. Yeah. Well, and you know what? If you're out here at the state fair, find somebody in uniform today, or, you know, obviously you've got a booth throughout the rest of the fair as well. So find someone in uniform, ask the questions. It doesn't hurt to ask. There's no raising your hand or taking an oath today, but getting information is a great way to go.
Yeah.
Well, hey, General Sean Mankey, Adjutant General, Minnesota National Guard, thank you so much for taking just a couple of minutes to come up on the stage here at Dan Patch Park, say hi to our listening audience, and just spend time with us on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, man. Sergeant Major, really appreciate it, and let's have a great day at the Minnesota.
Yep, enjoy the rest of your day up at that ceremony. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. Thank you for coming out here on Military Appreciation Day at the Minnesota State Fair. And we're up here on the stage recording our second of two shows out at Dan Patch. And in this third segment of the show, we're bringing in the commissioner from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, Mr. Brad Lindsay. Commissioner, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Doug. Appreciate it.
All right, good to see you here, and you know, it's a beautiful day. We got a great listening audience. The sun is shining. I'm kind of having to move closer and closer to the back of the stage. I wanted the table at the front of the stage so people could see you better, it's backfiring on me. You still have a little bit of shade, and I'm right here in the sun getting my arms burnt up, but that's okay. You know, it's the cost of doing business, Commissioner.
It's getting warmer by the minute. Yeah. Hopefully everybody's drinking water and brought clean socks.
Yeah, right? There you go, and well, we love it. We're glad that it's a beautiful day out here, the State Fair Military Appreciation Day, and Commissioner, I've only got you for, you know, maybe 10 minutes. Well, now about 9 minutes because I've been talking here. But let's talk a little bit about the last year. I know we're going to do a year in review, so we're not going to go into all the details. But is there anything over the past year that you're just like, I'm so glad that we finally were able to do this? Or, you know, there was some accomplishment that really makes you extremely happy over the last year.
Yeah, yeah. You know, one of the things I always talk about is just continuous improvement. You know, when we opened our three new veterans' homes, kind of at a tough time for hiring healthcare workers. It's been a struggle staffing up and then bringing up the census. I set a goal for July 1st of this year of 70% census in those three new homes, and all the staff stood up and we reached that goal. So now they have a goal of 90% by the end of the year. So
you got to keep on raising the bar.
Absolutely. We got to get those beds filled because we have veterans on the waiting list who need our services and need our care, and it's we provide great services with our staff to those folks.
So. Yeah, in the last show we talked to Diane Lynch DeCombs from the healthcare, as you know, assistant commissioner over there, and you know, that was one of the things we talked about, hiring, how important it is to continue to hire. And you know, one of the things that's been mentioned on the show before is often there's a waiting list because of the fact that we don't have the staff to allow people off that waiting list to get into some of the beds that are open. It's so very, very important point to let's get some more hiring done and fill it up. Let's get past 90%. You know, let's get to 100%.
Yep.
And, you know, really, really take care of that veteran community. Commissioner, when the governor was on earlier, he talked about one of the proud things is the omnibus bill. I'm just wondering from your perspective as it relates to the pieces of that omnibus, is there anything in there in any of those provisions that really made just a huge impact that you were most excited about to see get put into the omnibus?
Yeah, yeah. 5 years in a row with the Veterans Omnibus Bill, so we appreciate the support of the governor and the legislature in getting that done and keeping veterans a little separate to keep out that whole political play that we end up with sometimes. And yeah, you know, there wasn't a lot of money this session or last session, but we still had some really great achievements, one of which is we're going to be able to bury National Guard and Reserve who did not otherwise qualify for our state cemeteries starting January 1st. They will be buried in our state cemeteries if they choose to do so. which is huge.
Yeah, it certainly is, since we are a National Guard or Reserve component state.
Absolutely, absolutely. So big change there. We'd been restricted from doing that for many years by the federal VA and their regulations as far as our grants that we receive from them, but they relented and we got the law changed now, and we're gonna take care of
those
folks.
Was this a classic greasy wheel, or excuse me, squeaky wheel gets the grease, or how did we get there?
Somewhat it was. I leave a lot of the credit to the commissioner up in North Dakota, who fought the VA to allow for our state grant cemeteries to have National Guard and Reserves buried, and finally they relented, and so then we just needed to change our state law to allow for it as well. So, as I said, we got that done, and we expect that's going to have a large impact on our facility up there at Camp Ripley, or next to Camp Ripley at Little Falls, because of the proximity. So
right, and then eventually, I know it's still in planning. We're not announcing anything here, but hopefully in the future, after some testing or whatever you might want to call it is done, maybe there's a fifth veteran cemetery that could potentially come along, but that's mm-hmm. down the road. You're in early planning stages of that, so
right.
We no have promises the, there.
We have the authority to create a new cemetery up near Bemidji. We just don't have any money for it.
Yeah, well, there's always a problem with money, isn't it? Let's get into another important topic. This came up with the governor as well, and that is homelessness.
Yeah.
I understand that there were things that changed at the federal level, so the process to declare one of the continuums of care, Ramsey County in this case, as effectively ending homelessness. We know that process went away at the federal level.
Right.
You've been doing some work internally, working with some other state partners. I'm just wondering if you can give us a status of Ramsey County and what we see there as it relates to maybe finally, hopefully, declaring that, yeah, they have effectively ended veteran homelessness.
Yeah, unfortunately, we were the victim of timing. So since about 2011, the U.S. Interagency Council on Homelessness set up the criteria for community or state to declare functional zero for veterans homelessness, and that's been in process for many years, and 9 of our 10 continuums of care in Minnesota have received that federal declaration. Last February, after the change in administration, usage, their roles were restricted, and they were no longer able to do that. We ask the federal VA to take over the role, because they still are stating that it's one of their major goals is to end veterans homelessness as well. They declined to do so, so we started looking for another way to recognize, as you said, Ramsey County. These communities put in a lot of work, they put in a lot of effort, they put in a lot of money to try to end veterans homelessness in their community. They changed the rules for their public housing. Just all kinds of different things that have shown that they want to get the job done. About the same time we hit the numbers and all the criteria for Ramsey County, the federal process was eliminated. So we started looking at some other way to make sure Ramsey County gets the recognition they deserve. I said, hey, we're the state. They're the county. Seems like there's some way we could do that. So we have a group called the Minnesota Interagency Council on Homelessness, which is made up of multiple cabinet-level agencies in the state who are working on the plan to end homelessness in the state, and we went to them and asked if they would be willing to review Ramsey County and recommend whether they meet the criteria or they don't now, and that process is moving forward now. Looks good. Looks like we're going to get that still.
Good. Just a couple of minutes left here. Let's talk about right now. It's the 1st of September. We're at Military Appreciation Day. We've had previous guests talk about suicide prevention, the importance of preventing suicide, and the MDVA. I know that you're doing some expansion of programming, some other efforts, and I'm just wondering if you can talk a little bit about those efforts and, you know, really what are some of the results you're now seeing as you've incorporated some of these things like a Veterans Community Health Program and the Navigators and that kind of thing.
Yeah, so a couple of years ago, we finally got the money to actually hire those additional staff, like those community health navigators, our director to kind of head that effort. It's taken us time to get those positions filled, to find the right persons with the right skills for that, and we've done so now, and all that team is in place. One of the requirements that the legislature put on us last year, I believe it was that we create a whole veteran suicide prevention plan. And we did that, and we've presented that to the legislature, and they've accepted it. And so we're working off that plan now to end veteran suicide in the state. You know, it's a tough thing to work on. You know, homelessness was tough and has taken us roughly 15 years to get where we're at right now. Unfortunately, you know, suicide's probably going to take us some time to trial and error on what works, what doesn't. One of the tough parts with suicide is we don't have the immediate numbers that we have on homelessness. You know, with our homeless veteran registry, I can tell you every day how many homeless veterans we have. Our suicide prevention numbers are basically numbers we get annually, so a little slower to adjust.
Well, I think the lesson that we learned when the governor was on is, you know what, you need not be afraid to ask if someone needs some help and be able to point them to some resources. 888 Link Vet is one of the places we can send them. So,
absolutely.
All right, Commissioner, we're out of time here, but thanks for jumping up here on the stage and spending a little bit of time with us on Minnesota Military Radio. Hope you enjoy the rest of the day. I know you're heading up to the big program at the band shell, so good luck, enjoy the day, and thanks for spending time with us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. And come see us at the Education Building. We're at the fair all week.
Awesome. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Doug Wortham. I'm out here at the Minnesota State Fair Military Appreciation Day and hitting our final segment. We're broadcasting, recording live, I should say, out here at the Dan Patch stage. And in this last segment, I'm bringing on Brigadier General Dan Begin and Command Chief Master Sergeant Richard Schumacher from our Minnesota Air National Guard. And gentlemen, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you. We really appreciate it.
All right, awesome. So, General, I'm going to start with you because you're the rookie on the show. The chief has been on before. We spent some time together in the Africa Area Command Operations and got to interview while we were there on that big Serving Our Troops event. And so, you know, we only get 10 minutes together, and I'd like to hear just a real quick thing. How long have you been serving in our Minnesota Air National Guard? Where'd you come from? How'd you get to Minnesota?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say I have a more of an eclectic Guard background. I've been here with the Minnesota Air National Guard for almost 3 years. Going back in time, I was active duty Air Force for the first 11 years. 11 years, 3 months, 28 days, not that I was counting at
the
time.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
And then transferred to the Air National Guard in 2007. Was in the Maryland Air National Guard flying there. Then I did a number of assignments in Washington, D.C. between the Pentagon and on Capitol Hill. Then flew with the Pennsylvania Air National Guard during all that time. Was in command at the colonel level in the Delaware Air National Guard. And now I've been in Minnesota for the last 3 years.
Now, history's not going to, like, prove that you're going to leave Minnesota anytime soon. Is it like you're kind of moving around here?
You know what? For one reason I can give you, I am now a lifetime member of the Minnesota National Guard Association of the United States. So I'm going nowhere.
Oh, well, good. Yeah. Now, what kind of aircraft did you fly?
Different versions of the C-130, much like Chief Schumacher. The older version, C-130Es, Hs, and C-130Js, and then some of our special operations variants as well.
And you now serve as the Assistant Adjutant General for the Minnesota Air National Guard. So thank you for your service. Thanks for being here, like I said. And I'll come over to hear you real quick, Chief. How long have you been in the Minnesota Air National Guard?
37 years.
All right, 37 years. Anybody out in this audience younger than 37? Look at all those hands over there, Chief. Oh, my goodness, yeah. All right, well, hey, we've had you on the show before, and so welcome. And I want to maximize some time because, General, you talked a little bit about the different aircraft and the Adjutant General. When he was on, he talked about modernization, how important it is. And let's talk about these 130Js. I mean, that's going to be a big thing. He said next summer, hopefully we're fielding them. I mean, that's the big push. And then, of course, the big push for what we call the next generation fighters, which I think is kind of a cool way to describe it. How do you describe the importance of this continued modernization inside of our military?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, the way I look at the National Guard in general, we really have three tiers, right? We support our community. We support Homeland Defense around the country. But we also support our commanders, our military commanders around the world, regardless if it's the Middle East, it's Europe, it's the Pacific. But our third leg of the National Guard is partnerships with all of our colleagues around the world. And in the case of Minnesota, we have Norway and we also have Croatia. And as part of that, having modernized equipment is significant for all of those missions. for the next, not just, you know, 2 to 10 years, but probably the next 30 to 40 years. And another way I put it, you know, we have the best guardsmen in the world in this state, so we need to have the
and
best.
And you can say that because you've come from multiple states. And
I can say that with a little bit of authority, yeah. Hopefully, a little bit of background. But if we're going to have the best guardsmen, we better have the best equipment and the best 100%. Aircraft in order to do whatever is called we're called upon to do by the governor, by the President of the United States, and by our allies around the world.
Now, Chief, you know, obviously at the strategic level, our officers are trying to, you know, advocate for this modernization. With modernization or change comes adjustments that have to be done within the formation itself, the actual airmen on the ground doing the things, right? So we know that when these J models come into place, we know that there's going to be some jobs that are going to be eliminated because the aircraft is so smart now that maybe we don't need the navigator anymore. And I know the last time we talked about the role changing and the whatever you would call it, right, as they get reclassified maybe. I'm just wondering how that process is going and, you know, whether or not that plan is solid in place and moving forward.
Yeah, CSM, it is solid right now. We have a really good plan. The flight engineers, which we lose on the C-130H3s.
Oh, I said navigator.
We do lose the navigator as well. But
okay, so my memory isn't so bad.
Nope, you're 50% there. So about 30% of them will go back to maintenance. 30% of them will transfer into the loadmaster career field. And then 30% will just retire out with the H3s.
Yeah. Well, the good thing is you got a plan, and I know you've been communicating it to the formation, which is extremely important. You don't want to, you know, just throw it on somebody, you know, the day the aircraft are going off and the new tails are coming in. So that's something that I'm glad that you're doing. General, you know, one of the things that, you know, is of course important is security, right? And we talk about the environment and, you know, even the Adjutant General talked about we've got soldiers, airmen, we've got deployed for real-world missions outside of Minnesota. We got internal times where we're deploying our soldiers and airmen. He mentioned the example up in the Boundary Waters canoe area. But is part of your job, I imagine, you have to be looking forward in order to make sure that the Minnesota Air National Guard is in the best position possible to continue to do the missions that might be required 10, 15, 20 years down the road. And so I'm wondering if, you know, in your mind, what are some of those capabilities where you're like, hey, we have to secure this. Well, this is something we have to keep doing. And are there other things that you're thinking about that have to be able to come into play?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. In fact, I just spent this weekend at a conference where that was one of the many themes we talked about and we focus on. I spent time in Washington, D.C. doing the same. I'll start with the end of my last question. Modernized equipment, modernized aircraft is the first step in that. But in terms of evolving mission areas to keep our airmen and our soldiers safe, frankly, to keep the citizens of the state and the country safe, I'll just really quickly mention two items. One is all things security for cyber capabilities or evolving cyber capabilities that our Air National Guard needs to not only stay in but evolve based on the threats, frankly, both in the country and around the world, because obviously cyber doesn't have a boundary. And we've talked a lot about that. The other is what we term, it's a new term, is air-based air defense. All things related to all the drones that we see that could be the size of the water bottle that's here to my right to something's much, 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 much larger. And there's, you know, open source discussions about it all the time. But in the Air National Guard, partnered with the Department of the Air Force and the Army, there's been multiple efforts to try to not only understand the policies as it relates to, you know, federal aviation, you know, restrictions to what the Department of War needs to work on, but also technology and the funding that goes with that. So it's something we spend a lot of time on, and that'll give us, you know, the security that we need to continue to do the jobs that our airmen and soldiers are asked to do for decades to come.
General, I want to talk to you a little bit about, you know, you've spent time in different types of or different states with the National Guard, obviously on active duty too, but in the National Guard in particular, because we have our soldiers and our airmen living in the communities where they're serving often, right? And so I'm just wondering if you can talk a little bit about why that connection to community actually makes the National Guard much stronger.
Yeah, and I can say that, again, as you put it, because I do have some active duty background where you would move every 3 years from assignment to assignment. I think one of the best foundations of the National Guard is that we are your neighbors. you know, you look left and right, and we're wearing civilian clothes 80% of the time, but in uniform 20% of the time. But frankly, we're serving 100% of the time. You know, most guardsmen, over 80%, are part-time and can understand, you know, what everyone else is trying to manage in their daily lives, but then put on the uniform to support and defend the Constitution of the United States, which is in our oath, but also to support those around us. And, you know, the term that may not be used as often as I think it should is the fact that we're citizen soldiers and citizen airmen.
Yeah.
That really encapsulates why we are your neighbors and your friends, but we also decide to serve, to protect, you know, every liberty that we have.
Awesome. Chief, about 20 seconds here. I'm just wondering if you can describe to people walking around the fair today, you know what, they're going to see people in uniform. What do you want people to know and understand about those who serve right now?
Yeah, I want to recognize how professional these young airmen and soldiers are and how they fit into the community. They're just part of your neighbors, and go up and talk to them, thank them, shake their hand, get
That's
to know
awesome.
Them.
All right, well, hey, thank you, Brigadier General Dan Begin and Command Chief Master Sergeant Rick Schumacher. Thanks for joining us on Minnesota Military Radio. Really appreciate you spending a little bit of time with us. All right, and I'd like to tell everybody here that before we end the show, I want to thank all of our guests, of course, anybody who came out to Dan Patch Park this morning for Military Appreciation Day at the Minnesota State Fair. I want to thank you all for listening to Minnesota Military Radio. Of course, we always welcome your feedback, your guest suggestions. Go visit MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com, click on Contact Us. You can also catch up on past episodes there or on your favorite podcast platform. Next week, we're back in the studio where we visit with the director of the Twin Cities Vet Center and learn how they fit in to the Department of Veterans Affairs and take care of those who have served. I'm Doug Wortham, your host on Minnesota Military Radio. Have a productive week, and please take a moment to thank and honor those who have served and those who continue to serve and sacrifice so we can enjoy the liberty and freedom this great country has to offer.